Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the BT Powerhouse podcast. This is number 49, so we're about to crack 50 here, so which is fun. But it is Friday, November 20th. We are officially a week into the college basketball season, which is exciting and kind of crazy. You know, you spend all summer waiting for it. Finally gets here and it just snaps by. But yeah, a ton of great action last week, a ton of great action coming up in the coming week. You know, there's a lot to be excited about around the Big Ten. But yeah, my name's Thomas Bendit. I'm the manager of BT Powerhouse. We have a really exciting podcast today. As I mentioned last week, kind of how the general format is going to go is it's going to be every Friday morning. Hopefully we'll get it up to the site late Friday or, you know, Friday afternoon. And then the basic podcast, we're going to spend the first half talking kind of about the Big Ten, what's going on in the conference. And then we're going to have a special guest on for the second half. And we're going to talk about what's going on in the national scene, some of the other things that the Big Ten fans might not have as close of a finger on, a thumb to see what's going on. But yeah, and for that, we're going to be having Robert O'Neill from Big East Coast Bias. Obviously, the big event this week has been the Gavitt Games for between the Big Ten and the Big East. So I think he was an appropriate guest. And we're hoping to actually start to have him on each week to kind of talk about what's going on elsewhere, not just the Big East, as he's a college basketball diehard. But before we get to him, we have Sean Nash, who's one of our own contributors, on to kind of chat about the Big Ten and what's going on. Sean, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me on this week.
Yeah. Excited to chat some basketball. Obviously, there's been a lot of action, whether it's been the Gavitt Games, some non-conference games, the Champions Classic. What have been your big general thoughts and, I guess, takeaways of, you know, the first week of college basketball in the Big Ten?
I think, obviously, we learned already with Michigan State, they're certainly for real and a threat to make a deep run when we get to March. Indiana, so far, a team I'm going to be covering throughout the season, they're one of the most fun teams so far to watch in college basketball. Thomas Bryant, so far, so good, averaging 13 points a game. Calling himself a Jim Lion last night after their win over Creighton. Which is interesting, and that guy is he's insane on the court, just crazy energy from him so far.
Yeah, I agree, and you know, that's one game I definitely wanted to get to was last night, you know, as part of the Gavitt Games. I believe there's 8 total Big Ten, Big East games, and Indiana played last night. They played against Creighton, I don't think anybody thinks is a great team this year, but they're at least a decent top 100-ish team. And Indiana just blew the doors off of them. I don't know about you. Did you ever think Creighton was in that game?
No. I mean, when Indiana just goes on those runs, and we saw it last week in their second game where they went, I think, hit 14 shots in a row. I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of competition you're going against. If you're a team that can shoot like that, there's nobody that can play with you. I think we'll, with their weaker opponents, we'll see a lot like this. But obviously, with the Maui Invitational and then the trip to Duke, I think we'll really learn how good this Indiana team is. And if they can play at that speed and that intensity against stiffer competition.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you. And, you know, I hate to read too much into, you know, a game or two. But honestly, I think Indiana might be able to go on the road and beat Duke. You know, I didn't think, I don't know if you had a chance to watch that Duke-Kentucky game on Tuesday, but I didn't think Duke looked all that great. I know they're playing Kentucky, but I think Indiana has a fighting chance. Would you agree with that?
Certainly. Obviously, Duke lost quite a few pieces from their championship team last year. And like I said, if Indiana can shoot the way they did, or the way they have so far this season, they just have so many options on the floor. At this point, and even Yogi Ferrell, he struggled last night going 1-for-6 from the outside, but even when you got guys like that, you still got Nick Zaislav, James Blackman, both going 4-for-6 from the outside that can really pick up the slack. Then you got Thomas Bryant showing he can step out. I know he only went 1 for 4, but if he can hit outside shots consistently and force big men outside, that'll be huge for the Hoosiers moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, to me, I think the most telling thing of that game, you know, I was obviously watching it, and, you know, Indiana, you know, hyper pace, you know, running, trying to get as many shots up as possible, and Creighton was just so out of it that at one point, you know, just trying anything, they throw out a zone, and Indiana just immediately nails like 2 threes, and it was just like, man, yeah, you guys have no chance in this game, Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, which I was going to say is a good sign, because that's been one of the biggest things for Indiana the past couple of years, is that they could never play against a 2-3 zone. And then Creighton goes into it, and I thought, ah, here we go. They're going to start making a comeback. But sure enough, Indiana just started knocking down more shots, and that's what they have to do. A team would be crazy with as many shooters as they have to run 2-3 zones against this team this year.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. You know, I know that's been kind of the – quote-unquote Achilles heel or whatever you want to call it for Indiana, but I don't think that's going to work this year against this team. I think it's going to be one of the best offensive teams in the country if it isn't already. And, you know, seeing how that defense and Bryant kind of progresses will be interesting. But yeah, they're going to have some big matchups. I know they get Wake Forest on Monday, which is a another intriguing game. I think Indiana wins, but definitely Wake Forest is not a joke. But Indiana obviously off to a hot start, 3-0. I did want to hit on the other massive win of the week, which, you know, you were talking about, was Michigan State over Kansas. I know you said that you thought Michigan State was for real now. What were kind of your takeaways of that game? I know it seemed like the national media was kind of shocked that Kansas went down.
Well, I think what we saw from both of those games Tuesday night is that even if you get a lead up on these top Big Ten teams, obviously you can't put them away. I believe Michigan State was down 13 at one point in the second half, and they just kept battling and kept coming back at Kansas. And Kansas did a good job in the second half, holding them off for the most part, but then those final couple minutes, Michigan State was able to knock down a couple of big shots there. Obviously, Denzel Washington getting that triple-double was huge, or excuse me, Denzel Valentine, not Denzel Washington, not the actor. The basketball player was able to get a triple-double. And then Matt McQuaid coming out of nowhere, knocking down those two late threes, going 3 for 3 from the floor, having that huge block on the defensive end was obviously a surprise. I don't think anyone knew who Matt McQuaid was entering that game. But obviously, still some work to do for Michigan State. They allowed Perry Ellis to go off for 21 points. Frank Mason and Wayne Selden also had some pretty big games there. So some work to do there, but obviously that's the type of game you expect to see in a Sweet 16 Elite Eight setting. It's a good sign already. I guess a bad sign for everyone else in college basketball if Tom Izzo's teams are already winning those kind of games.
Yeah. I thought you know, the biggest thing for me, you know, obviously Denzel Valentine just was on fire. He was unbelievable in that game. I mean, I don't know his stat line off the top of my head. Okay, 29 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists. And, you know, that kind of speaks for itself on how crazy he was. But, you know, one of the other things that people aren't really talking about is Valentine had a 12-1 assist-to-turnover ratio in that game. Like, he is legitimately putting up what would be, like, insane point guard numbers, but he's not really playing point guard. He's also, like, scoring as well. You know, we'll kind of see if he can keep up these numbers, but if he puts up numbers like that, he's going to be Big Ten Player of the Year. I mean, there's no getting around it. We're talking triple-double on almost a nightly basis. But, I thought the other thing, too, which – we kind of already knew was that, or at least for those who had been following Michigan State, is they've become a really good shooting team, a really good offensive team over the last couple of years. And I think that really carried them to that win. And I think it's going to, if that front court can kind of come along, I think this team is not only a serious contender in the Big Ten, but a serious contender for another Final Four and maybe even the title. I don't know about if it's just me, but I haven't been thoroughly impressed with any single team. You know, last year, obviously, you had Kentucky, Wisconsin, Duke, but I haven't thought any team has massively stood out. Is that something you'd agree with, or?
Yeah, for the most part, obviously, it's scary for the rest of the nation to see Kentucky just kind of handle Duke the way they did on Tuesday. But obviously, a very young team, five newcomers playing for them at this point. But yeah, no one really impressive. I mean, I think the best teams, obviously, they're going to come out of the Big Ten and the ACC, but no one's really wowed at this point. Obviously, there haven't been a lot of big games yet. We'll see a lot more, I think, this week coming up with Maui and then obviously the Big Ten ACC challenge on if there's any true front runners for the national title moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You know, I personally, I know I'm going to talk with Robert later in the podcast about some of the national stuff, but personally, I would vote Kentucky number one if I had an AP ballot, which unfortunately I don't. Last year, you know, obviously they played Kansas in the Champions Classic and just destroyed them. I mean, they won by like 40 points. And this year, you know, they win convincingly over Duke, but it isn't like an eyebrow-raising win. So, I mean, and what my point is I think they're beatable. I think a team like Indiana, Michigan State, maybe Maryland, Purdue, you know, one of the top Big Ten teams, even if they're not an insane team, can knock off one of, you know, a Kentucky like that. Last year, you really felt like the whole season it was like, yeah, it's going to be Duke, Wisconsin, Kentucky, and, you know, maybe one of the other ACC teams. But it felt like it was just deadlock that those teams were going to face. But it doesn't feel like that so far. You know, maybe that'll change. But yeah, so I definitely think Michigan State is a contender. Obviously, a huge win. I don't think they have much coming up immediately. They get a couple easy games. Thanksgiving, they head out west. They get Boston College, potential matchup with Arizona. But, yeah, they get a few easy games off here. So, well, at least, you know, hopefully for the Spartans, they get them off. But yeah, a couple of the other teams I wanted to touch on. First, Maryland. I think unanimous or nearly unanimous pick to win the Big Ten before the season. They're 2-0. They beat Mount St. Mary's at home pretty convincingly, and then they hold off Georgetown in a thrilling game on Tuesday night. What are your thoughts on Maryland, and how do you think they've played so far?
Well, I think it goes to your point about talking about there's no real team that's wowed us so far. I mean, Maryland, they didn't look great to start off that game. Devontae Smith-Rivera kind of had his way early. I mean, all of Georgetown's starters had great games, all scoring in double figures, and it really took Maryland knocking down a few shots at the end to win this one. Diamond Stone so far, only 5 points in that game, 1-for-4 shooting. Not great, but Rashid Suleiman seems to be a great fit, the transfer from Duke so far. He had 10 points, played 37 minutes, most minutes by far, or not by far, but for Maryland. And then, of course, Melo Trimble is just Melo Trimble with 24 points. Obviously, some struggles at the free throw line early, but then knocks down 4 in a row to kind of steal that game. But, yeah, they certainly have some weak points they need to work on. Obviously, that was a big game, a lot riding on it first time both those teams have played, which apparently used to be a huge rivalry. I had no idea that that was even a thing because it's been, what, 40 years since they've played. But, yeah, I think it goes back to your point, Thomas, that really there's no wow teams here in the first week in college basketball.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I think the big thing, you know, Melo Trimble is that team. You know, for anyone who talked about, you know, I know there was some rumblings that, you know, maybe Robert Carter, Melo Trimble. And the biggest thing he did he did last year is he gets to the free throw line. He makes people foul him. I mean, he had 18 free throw attempts on the night, you know, 13 for 18 shooting from the line. But, yeah, and he fouled, essentially, he was responsible for fouling. I forget who fouled out for Maryland, but, or not Maryland, Georgetown. But he got a lot of those guys in foul trouble, and he got them sitting on the bench for long durations. But outside of him, I thought the big things that, you know, obviously he was fantastic, but outside of him, I thought the things that really held Maryland back is they had an awful shooting first half. And I know that's excuse-like, whatever you want to call it, but, I mean, they had open looks. And, you know, Jake Layman's just ribbing them out or missing them. And I don't think Maryland's a shooting team, you know, a la an Indiana or something like that, but they should have shooters. And, I mean, Layman was not shooting well. Nickens was not shooting well. He went 1-for-5. I think he was one of the best shooters on the team last year. So, I mean, I think there are – the shooting was a bit, below average for where they're going to be normally. But the other thing is the center position was not good for Maryland. You know, Dodd and Stone were the main guys there. They combined for 5 points. Stone had a 64 offensive rating. Dodd had a 70 offensive rating. And may I say, Diamond Stone was undiamond-like in this game. had to throw out that joke. But, I think that's the big thing. You know, there was a lot of talk that, you know, maybe Diamond Stone wasn't the best big man on this team and that Dodd would beat him out and kind of maintain that spot. I think we've seen that Maryland, to be what people perceived Maryland to be before the year, Stone has to be better than that. I mean, he has to be putting up more than 5 points in a game and playing 14 minutes. You know, it's just a fact. And I think this team is one of the best teams in the Big Ten, regardless, even if Stone is just an okay guy. But they are not going to be a dominant Final Four contender if Stone plays like that. So I think that'll be the big thing to watch going forward on Maryland. Obviously, it's better to, you know, kind of fix your mistakes after a win than a loss. But they should get a few easier games coming up. They're gonna have their non-conference tournament, and then obviously the Big Ten ACC showdown with North Carolina. I think that's gonna tell a lot about whether Stone has started to turn the corner. I know North Carolina might still be without Marcus Page for that game. All that's still up in the air, but there will be more challenges for Maryland. It'll be interesting to follow. But, I think the big thing is they need Diamond Stone to produce more than he did. Even on the defensive end, you know, if he can take a step up there, I think that would do a lot. But moving down. A couple other teams I wanted to hit on here. One of the big ones, Wisconsin. Not for good reasons, but bad reasons. We haven't had our podcast since they lost at home to Western Illinois last Friday night. What are your thoughts on Wisconsin? Was it a fluke? Is it something to keep your eye on? Where are the Badgers headed?
Well, I think it's always something to keep your eye on. Obviously, this stuff happens. We see it every year where teams that shouldn't lose to an inferior opponent do in the early season. But it does show their vulnerabilities, obviously, losing Frank the Tank, obviously doing a lot more than we thought it would. I mean, good bounce backs against Siena and North Dakota, not that they've really had any strong competition since that loss to Western Illinois. And Western Illinois, typically a pretty decent team. Obviously, we'll learn a lot more about this Wisconsin team. They got Georgetown coming up this week, obviously, and then in a couple weeks, they go at Oklahoma and at Syracuse. So I think we'll learn really how good this Wisconsin team is here in the next couple weeks. I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily a reason to hit the panic button yet. I mean, these guys seem to have it going the other night against North Dakota. Hayes played all right. Koenig and Happ both led the way with 17 points. Both shot well from the floor, both knocking down 7 field goals. So, you know, obviously outside, they're not a great shooting team. They really haven't ever been, just shooting 30% outside the other night. If that's something they can improve on, that can certainly help. But yeah, like I said, no reason yet to hit the panic button. If they lose a couple more games here in the non-conference, though, it might be then.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, there's no way around it. I always say this. I actually wrote an article on Wisconsin last weekend. But the thing is like there's no getting around it. And I think the first step has to be just admitting, yeah, that was a terrible loss. You know, losing to Western Illinois at home. I don't care. You can talk about, oh, you know, they hit their shots or they played really tough. You know, whatever terms you want to use. It's a bad loss. You know, there's no getting around that fact. But at the same time, it's also only one game. You know, we've seen teams, you know, Michigan State lost to Texas Southern last year, and they made the Final Four. So I don't think it's necessarily a death sentence because you lose one of those games. But, you know, you have to get back on track. You have to win some of these games. You know, and I think they play Georgetown later tonight, and I think that is a huge game. You know, Georgetown is beatable, definitely beatable, and I think Wisconsin has to get that game. But, yeah, I think the big things to follow are going to be Vito Brown and Ethan Happ. I think this team is going to kind of ride or die with those guys because – and not because I think they're the best players, because I think Hayes and Koenig are pretty predictable. I think they're both going to play well. They're both going to score 15 to 20 points a night. And I think it's going to be about how much do they get around those guys. And I think, you know, Happ and Brown, they played – pretty underwhelming in that first in that loss to Western Illinois, but they've started to come along, and I think if those two guys can keep coming, and Khalil Iverson, who played really actually played pretty well in the opener, and I think might be the best true freshman on the team, half redshirted, but I think watching how kind of those role players develop will be huge for Wisconsin. But
more to your point. It's not a death sentence because look at Purdue last year. They lost two games like that to North Florida and Gardner-Webb and still made the tournament as a, what, 8 or 9 seed? So certainly not a death sentence or anything, but obviously a bit of concern, especially when those early games you're looking for your team to come out and just cruise to an early win, get off to a good start, and then it's just a stumble and fall right on your face. And it's a game where Western Illinois really controlled that whole game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean – you know, and that's another thing, you know, I wrote in that article that I did was that, you know, it wasn't a fluke win. You know, Western Illinois deserved to win that game. They outplayed Wisconsin for pretty much from start to finish. You know, maybe you can talk about shooting and, you know, Vito Brown kind of came on at the end. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, they didn't hit a half-court heave or something to win the game. You know, they just won it. But, yeah, definitely not a death sentence. Wisconsin still has plenty of time. And they have plenty of non-conference games to score wins. You know, maybe that's a good and bad thing. Some difficult games coming up, but you know, they have plenty of room, you know, to build their resume and overcome that. But moving on, a couple of the other teams. I didn't know if you had any major takeaways from these guys. All of them really haven't played anyone yet, so I wasn't going to spend much time on them. But Michigan, Purdue, Northwestern. I guess Penn State, they're all 2-0. Oh, Ohio State as well. They're all 2-0. I guess Penn State had the win over DePaul, which was kind of big. But any takeaways on any of those teams? I mean, they're all 2-0. I guess Purdue's 3-0. Haven't really played anyone too substantial yet.
With Purdue, obviously the big storyline is A.J. Hammond's finally seeing the floor against Incarnate Word. But obviously, Matt Painter is still going to have a short leash with him. There was a play where Hammond's there was a turnover, didn't hustle back. Incarnate Word got an easy bucket, and that was as I think Hammond's was on the floor for maybe a minute. And as soon as that happened, Painter pulled him right off the floor. He ended up playing 15 minutes though, scoring 8 points. But Isaac Haas has stepped up so far, and I don't think that's really surprising. Another fellow. 7-footer. He scored 17 points the other night. Obviously, and then with Caleb Swanigan, he's been decent so far. Obviously, the big thing with Purdue is how good are the guards going to be for these guys outside. Rafael Davis has looked good so far, but really it's going to be the how well the guards play is how far this Purdue team's going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't found anything too surprising. I think the big thing for me is that I wasn't expecting them to play that well without Hammonds, I guess. Because again, you know, when I say that Purdue hasn't played anyone, I don't mean they have just played, you know, the bottom of the heap. You know, Ohio State played like Grambling State, which is like the worst team in the country every year.
Yeah.
But because Purdue had that game with Vermont at home, which, you know, Vermont's one of those fringe top 100 teams. So they're not good by any measure, but they're also not terrible. So, I mean, it's sort of like at least some sort of sample size on how your team is. And they played without Hammonds and destroyed Vermont. You know, Vermont had no chance in that game. And I think, you know, that kind of shocked me. It is going to be interesting to see how they kind of work out that front court rotation now that Hammonds is back a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be one of those things. You kind of want to wait to see, you know, they have Old Dominion on Saturday, which is, again, not an outstanding team, but Old Dominion is actually good enough to where you beat them, and that's a resume boost. So I think that might give us a little more of a taste of how good this Purdue team is. But outside of that, it'll be, you know, I think they've generally met or exceeded expectations this year. So the only other note on any of those teams I had was just that Michigan does get Xavier tonight in the Big Ten Big East challenge. It's the final game. So for those wondering if the Big Ten is going to win, that'll be the deciding game. The Big Ten will win if Michigan wins.
Yep.
The Big Ten will tie if they don't. So one thing to follow for the Wolverines, I guess. But yeah, outside of that, you know, generally pretty weak team opponents for those teams, and they won out. But moving on, a couple other teams I did want to hit. The first one is Iowa. Everyone seemed to be kind of in panic mode when Iowa lost that exhibition game. You know, as I talked about on the podcast last week, it actually is one of the best D2 teams in the country. I know that may not sound great, but it's still, you know, it's not losing to a normal D2 team, I guess I should say. But Iowa 3-0 now, and they played Marquette last night on the road and completely annihilated Marquette. Marquette was never in that game. Iowa won by 28 points, and frankly, that might have actually been closer than the game actually was. any takeaways on Iowa so far?
Well, I didn't actually watch last night's game. I was watching Rutgers spike it on fourth down to lose to St. John's by two last night, and then I switched over to something I can't remember. And then I looked at Twitter and saw, well, Iowa's up 23-6. I was like, no need to watch that game. And I saw Peter Jock ended up going for 20 points, 4-for-6 from the outside. Obviously, Adam Woodbury still down low. Gives Iowa a great chance to do something this season. But, yeah, when all your scores are scoring in double figures and you're up 48-21 in the first half, I mean, there's not really anything you can do. I guess Fran McCaffrey won't be too happy that they let Marquette keep up with them in the second half because Iowa only outscored them by one. But, I mean, you still won by 28 on the road at a Big East team. I don't know really how mad McCaffrey – I know he likes to get mad a lot. I don't know really how mad he can get at this game, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, what were your I guess before I hit on Iowa, what were your thoughts on that Rutgers game? It was just kind of chaos at the end there.
Yeah, I thought Rutgers – I had a thought, like, they're going to blow this, aren't they, when they were up, like, 15 and St. John started to knock down a few shots. I mean, they got a clean look at the end. They were literally, what, probably 3/10 of a second away, more on the clock, from winning that game. But obviously, I don't think anyone really expects anything from Rutgers in their second year in the Big Ten. And that kind of shows why, because I don't think St. John's is a very good team. I think they're going to struggle mightily against Vanderbilt in the first round on Monday out in Maui. But, yeah, of those bottom-tier teams of the Big Ten, I think Penn State's been the most pleasant surprise so far. You mentioned it earlier, that big win over DePaul the other night in the Gavitt tip-off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Rutgers, it's one of those things where it's just there isn't enough firepower. I mean, I don't think St. John's is great, and I think Rutgers – if they play even semi-decent, they end up winning that game. But, yeah, there just isn't enough firepower. You know, Corey Sanders was kind of mediocre last night, and they really need him to produce if they're going to be an okay team. But disappointing loss for them. On the flip side, Iowa looked outstanding. I do think – I said this on Twitter last night, but I do think it's actually a little bit more about Marquette being bad than it is Iowa being great. Because I thought Marquette was just had so many self-inflicted mistakes in that game. But nonetheless, big win for Iowa. They get Dayton next Thursday. And if they can get a couple of wins here, they're going to start building a pretty good NCAA tournament resume. But I think that's all I got for you here this morning, Sean. Any final thoughts here before we let you go?
Obviously, big week coming up. Should learn a lot more here in the next couple weeks with Big Ten and ACC. But at the very least, it's great to have college basketball back finally.
Yeah. Everyone can agree with that one. But, Sean, thanks for joining us.
Yep, not a problem. Thanks for having me again.
Again, that was Sean Nash. He contributes to our site, chatting about the Big Ten there. But in our second half here, we have Robert O'Neill from Big East Coast Biased to chat a little bit about what's going on across the country. Robert, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, Thomas. It's nice, again, that we got basketball early in the day today, all week pretty much. Really makes getting up, and, it's cold, so don't have to go outside or anything. Just stay in and watch basketball.
Yeah, exactly. It's been really nice to get back into the full swing of things. But yeah, before we jump into kind of some of the national storylines here, obviously you cover the Big East, Big Ten Big East Challenge going on, only one game left. What have been some of your takeaways so far?
There haven't been many surprises except for Iowa just totally blowing out Marquette yesterday, because Marquette, really, they're just in love with shooting the three and they can't control the ball, and that's been a problem all year so far. That's why they're 1-2. And they're actually kind of lucky to be 1-2. They needed overtime to beat IUPUI. So Marquette's definitely they're one of the teams that were pretty hyped as the bubble team coming into the year. So it has been kind of surprising. Other than that, though, the game's gone about how we've expected.
Yeah. I think for the most part, we pretty much predicted them right on last week when we were talking. I don't think either of us expected that blowout Iowa over Marquette. It's been a fun event. I've been excited. I mean, it's normally this time, like, you'll have two or three teams playing quality opponents and the rest are just kind of, schedule fillers. But it's been a lot of fun to have some real games here going. But with that, I wanted to get to some of the big national stories here. Obviously, the Champions Classic was on Tuesday. Michigan State beats Kansas. We were talking about that a little earlier. But Kentucky also beats Duke in pretty convincing fashion. What were some of your takeaways for the Wildcats beating the Blue Devils?
I mean, they looked a lot better than them. And, to shut Grayson Allen down pretty much, I know he didn't make a shot in the first half. He made a couple in the second half, but you know, he's a guy that Duke's obviously going to have to rely a lot on, at least in the early goings, because, it takes freshmen a little bit time to adjust. Kentucky just kind of ran him out of the United Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you agree with that, but, so far, I've kind of thought Kentucky's been the most impressive team in the country so far. Is that something you'd agree with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, I know some of the other teams, Maryland got a lot of hype and so on, but I thought Kentucky looked really solid in that game. And it's going to be interesting. I don't know if you feel the same way. We were talking about this earlier, but this year seems a lot more wide open at the top than last year.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because, North Carolina, they should probably be number one, but they're without the best player still in Marcus Paige. Kentucky's good. Maryland's pretty good. Duke's good. Obviously, Kansas is still waiting on Diallo to clear his eligibility. So there's still a lot of moving parts near the top.